Welcome to the Inside CCW Safe Podcast with founders Stan Campbell and Mike Darter. If you're forced to fight the battle for your life, CCW Safe will fight the battle for your future.
Hey, welcome back to the CCW Safe Podcast. I'm Mike Darter, and we're in studio today.
Stan Campbell.
We got a great guest with us.
Yes, we do. Jeff Gonzalez is with us in the house.
How you guys doing, Mike?
Good.
Stan?
You had a buddy, great... I'm all right.
Are you? Fantastic.
You had a great day here.
I did.
Sounds like.
We got a lot of stuff done. We accomplished quite a bit. I think we got a total of 10 videos.
Nice.
Bunch of stills. A lot of work.
Nice.
I'm excited. Yeah. I can't wait for those to air.
Very cool.
Yeah, we're really excited now. You know, we've been searching for someone for a while, you know, to really, you know, beef up our training that we push out, and, you know, and training tips and different things like that for shooters, new shooters, intermediate shooters and such. And, you know, we already had a relationship with Jeff through, you know, FTA. And, you know, he approached us and we sat down and talked about, you know, producing some videos for our audience, and we're really excited about it. So we wanted to bring him in into studio to so that you guys, we can introduce, you know, Jeff to you guys and know and talk a little bit about what we're going to do for you and some of the things that we're going to be pushing out as we move forward. So Jeff, if you would, to start off with, why don't you tell the people about yourself?
Sure. So my name is Jeff Gonzalez, president of Trident Concepts. Trident Concepts is a nationally recognized training company. Been around now for almost over 20 years. It's been a long time. My background comes from Naval Special Warfare. Spent the better half of my adult life there, both on the East Coast and the West Coast, as an operator, as an instructor. I left the Navy, and I virtually started doing the exact same job that I was doing for the Navy, but I was just doing it for another organization. I did that for a good while, and in that time period, I stood up Trident Concepts. And, you know, at a certain point, the work I was doing overseas was conflicting with my work that I was trying to do with Tricon. And eventually it got to the point where I was actually losing money being overseas. So I decided to go ahead and take a step back from that, focus, you know, 100% on Trident Concepts and trying to move that forward. So, you know, that has brought us here today. So that's, like I said, almost 20 years.
That's right. And then you're working with some of our industry partners as well, pushing out some videos. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Sure. Right now, the big one is I partnered with Brownells this year to do what we call the Daily Defense. And the Daily Defense video series is a video series that was conceptualized a year ago when we sat down to start this project. And the point behind it was to look at the fastest growing demographic within our industry, which were the new gun owners, first-time gun buyers, and provide them with a resource that they felt comfortable that they could get engaged with and kind of move a little bit closer to the side of the fence that we are hoping that they'll jump onto. You know, we wanted to be a resource for them to find information about all things as it relates to self-defense, home defense, personal security, the whole ball of wax. And we started that video series up. I think the first ones rolled out at the beginning of June, and they've been doing awesome. We, in fact, will start shooting season two in September or October. And so CCW Safe is a title sponsor for the Daily Defense video series, which makes it awesome to create more synergy and come in here and working with CCW Safe to promote not just what we're doing with Daily Defense, but also what we want to try to do with CCW Safe's audience.
That's right.
So it's pretty exciting.
And, you know, it's an interesting time. And, you know, you've been in the training world for how long?
About 20 years.
20 years.
Yeah.
And now, you know, how things have shifted, you know, because of COVID and different things like that, you know, a lot of the in-person training has changed. How, what type of challenges have you had, you know, kind of merging into your new normal?
Well, I think the challenges that we currently are facing is mainly uncertainty, right? The unknown. Like, folks are just not, like, let's back up. What we're seeing as a trend is people that want formalized instruction, right? But because of COVID and because of what's happening right now, so much uncertainty, it's created some hesitation. So our training classes are still on a national level. Our training classes that we're doing are still doing okay, but you know, you can tell that there's a reluctance to actually get involved because people are not sure. Is there another stay-at-home order around the corner?
Mm-hmm.
Is there some other crazy, you know, circumstances that, you know, nobody predicted? And that I believe is it's the fear of the unknown right now, like not knowing what's happening, where we're going. But like I was telling you the other day, when we sent out that survey to try to get more insight into mm-hmm. people's beliefs and mindset about, you know, this new project, if you will, or this their new journey, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Many people felt, you know, a little uneasy about their new firearms. Mm-hmm. And when we gave them a list of means to try to help curb that uneasiness, overwhelmingly, the majority of them all put down formalized instruction.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've just got to get to that point as a country where we are back to almost normal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is going to be something that takes a while.
Mm.
We have a couple clips. Justin, play those two clips. And these are just clips to kind of, you know, not just us saying this, but these are the numbers that are out there, and we're going to talk about this.
Mm.
Okay, get clip number one on first-time buyers.
Coming up. We'll get this. First-time gun owners or buyers?
The top one. I think it was owners.
Yep. Yep. Okay, here we go.
Americans are buying more guns than ever before. People worried about the pandemic? Sometimes buy guns. People worried about protests in this country? Sometimes buy guns. And by one estimate, people have bought 3 million more guns than normal since March. Almost half of all those sales are to first-time gun owners.
That's a lot of guns.
It really is.
Well, since March.
Yeah. Well, first of all, those numbers are grossly underestimated.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So depending on the source that you go to, through June, we're looking at 8.5 million.
Yeah.
So, you know, when that tape was recorded, I'm sure it was probably close to like the April May time period, mm-hmm. when the only numbers that we had were March numbers, which were insane.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, they were absolutely insane. And, you know, here's the way I look at that. We had a lot of people who were very reasonable, very centric in their beliefs, mm-hmm. and their views. And they really didn't have a bone in the fight as mm-hmm. far as, you know, Second Amendment or constitutional rights or anything like that. They just kind of went about their day-to-day lives and everything was good. And I believe they represent the majority of our country in mm-hmm. a sense. And then as this pandemic kind of got in a full swing, you saw the crazy as far as like food shortages.
Mm-hmm.
You saw the crazy as far as the unknown, not knowing what was happening. And so a lot of people were afraid. And that's that, you know, there's several key things to take away from this. What is driving these purchases? Well, it's fear.
Right. Yes.
Fear of like what's out there right now. We're dealing with a pandemic, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we get through that period of our year where it was about the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of taper off a little mm-hmm. bit. We kind of start to see a downturn of sorts. And then, you know, you wake up one morning and then all of a sudden we're looking at riots.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. so the key thing about that was that those people that purchased those firearms at that time, they started to run into buyer's remorse of sorts. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe this wasn't a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of those firearms were purchased and they were stored in their homes.
Yep.
And that was it. Right. And it was more about just in case.
Mm-hmm.
I want something just in case. Well, after that downturn and then all of a sudden the spike with the riots, now they're thinking to themselves, well, that was a very smart choice that I did that. You know, I'm glad that I did. And so now they've kind of changed their minds as far as their purchase. And what we're seeing with month after month after month of record sales, it's not a trend.
Mm-hmm.
It's an ideological shift.
Mm-hmm.
A lot
mm-hmm.
of these folks that are reasonable, centric-minded folks are now recognizing that they've got to they've got to take precautions.
Yes.
They've got to be prepared. And that falls on their shoulders.
Yes.
So, you know, I would bet that we're going to see a lot more.
Yeah. And one thing with the numbers, too, you got to take into account availability. What would the numbers have been if there would have been more availability?
That's a great
availability,
point.
You know, especially when you get into ammo, when you talk about ammo. So
I think, you know, and that's another interesting point, the ammunition, because what people think is that there's a run on ammo, that people are out there buying up thousands and thousands of rounds at a time, which is not entirely true. There are certainly people that are going out there buying whatever they can in as many in as much quantity as they can, no doubt about that, right? But with 8.5 million new gun owners going out there and buying one or two boxes a piece, that's contributing to that ammo shortage. It's not that people are out there going crazy buying up thousands of rounds. Like, why do you need all that ammo? There's just the, again, those centric, reasonable people that realize, you know what? I should probably have a couple boxes of ammo. I just bought this gun.
Have a gun?
Yeah.
I might need some ammo.
And voila. And that is one of the key things that we overlook. Like, a lot of times people are just thinking people are out there buying those cases of ammo one after the other, and it's not how it's really happening.
And I think I understood at also preceding that, we had not an ammo shortage, but we had a lot of our ammo that was already bought in, you know, big form, in, you know, big bulk by, you know, different organizations, whether it be law enforcement or whatever. So then you add in all these people, you know, buying ammo, and now we're at where we're at now. But it gives us a very good opportunity, I think, for not the, well, firearms industry, obviously, but the firearms mentality in this country, which I think we're seeing, like you said, a shift that is going to be seen as a shift that's going to last for a long time.
I wholeheartedly agree. I believe that that ideological shift is going to start to gain momentum. In other words, what I mean by that is, like, now we have people that, when at first, before any of this happened, had really no major opinion about firearms ownership, right? They didn't really have, could, you know, didn't really bother them. It wasn't part of their world. Now we're seeing more and more. So what I'm hoping for is that it's like we're going to see step-offs as we move through each of these phases, right? So we got so many of these people right now, and we're going to see a step-off of people that want to actually pursue the activity with a little bit more interest. Like, they now are interested in it. They want to pursue it for self-defense, maybe as a family outing, maybe even competitively. So, you know, we're going to see a drop-off of people like that. Then the next drop-off is people that are going to, you know, actively carry concealed on a regular basis, right? That's going to also drop off. And then I think another drop off is going to be people that now recognize the importance behind not just the Second Amendment, but all of them. They're now going to pay more attention. So they will become more of a 2A advocate, because now they recognize, holy cow, what if I didn't get the opportunity to purchase a firearm.
Yes.
You know, what if all of that and the crazy continues to happen? You know, what if the government continue to impose, you know, constitutionally questionable gun laws that now they become more vested in the Second Amendment and all the other amendments? Because we all know that, you know, the Second Amendment is kind of what binds it all together. It holds them, holds the government at you know, holds their feet to the fire, so to speak. So I have a feeling that that's probably what we're going to see, is a lot of these folks are now, because they're educated, they're smart people. They're not, you know, they're not the type of people that certain groups want to vilify or stereotype. They're really not. They're very intelligent. In fact, the ones that I've worked with have great insight into the world, into what's happening, and now they're putting a lot of that focused energy into this new hobby, this new direction, this new journey, to include potentially becoming, you know, Second Amendment advocates for us.
I agree. I'd like to talk about, we were talking about last night, some of these, the survey that you're talking about, because that was interesting. Was that done by, who was that done by?
By me, by Trident Concepts.
Okay.
Yeah, we sent that out. We sent it out to about 1,000 people. We got a couple, just shy of a couple hundred to respond back. I'm hoping that, you know, we usually put that survey out for about 2 weeks and then we close it off. So hopefully by then we've gotten everybody that's going to respond.
Right.
And then what we'll do after that is we'll really kind of dive deep into the weeds and kind of see what those data points tell us. But what it's telling us right now is some very interesting kind of observations. You know, one, I think the first question was, what is your interest in firearm purchase? You know, was it for self-defense, home defense, recreational, occupation, or other? And the majority of people, it was right there, self-defense.
Self-defense. Mm-hmm.
Self-defense overwhelmingly took it. I think it was like close to 70% of people purchasing a firearm. Their rationale behind it was self-defense. So that first question sets the tone for where people's heads are, you know? And then we ask questions like, do you, in the last 12 months, have you purchased a firearm? And at first, the respondents were like 100%, everybody that responded. And now we're starting to see kind of like as more respondents are submitting, we're seeing a shift. And it's like about 80% have and only about 20% haven't. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, that talks about the buying trends. You know, 80% of the people have purchased a firearm in the last 12 months. And here's what I found very interesting. I can't control who, because it's randomized, the emails that we sent it out. I can't control who it went out to. But the people that it went out to, the respondents have come back saying that this was not their first firearm that they purchased. Mm-hmm. So that kind of surprised me, because we hear so much about first-time gun owners. But again, it has to do with the spontaneity or the randomness of those emails where they're going out to. Because at the end, I asked another question about skill level, and that makes sense why I got that answer. Mm-hmm. And as we further went down into the meat, and this is where I wanted to try to get to, was people and the self-defense aspect. So how many of those respondents actually had their LTC? And so again, an overwhelming majority of people had their LTC. And then what I really liked was those that were carrying, great, that was awesome. But those that weren't carrying, why weren't you carrying? What was some of the reasons? And there was a couple that, you know, obviously they're logistical, right? They haven't gotten their license in the mail yet. It's still pending. And with the pandemic, it's probably taken a little bit longer. Then there are others that don't have the right gear. Like they're still trying to figure out all of that. And it's a puzzle of sorts, you know, solving that riddle. But then the others were like, I think it's at about 70. I think last night I looked at it and it was closer to 80% were looking. What would help them feel more comfortable was formalized instruction. Actually going out and getting formalized instruction, which again kind of talks about a little bit earlier in the show what we were talking about, which is, you know, people actually want to get out there and they want to learn, which is fantastic, which is great. Because that, to me, is one of the ways that we continue to help ourselves expand that Second Amendment advocacy is by getting these newer shooters into the fold and having them actually take ownership of it and actually become, you know, our advocates, like have them actually start recognizing the importance behind advocacy and going out and actually doing it for us. Cause it's a grassroots campaign that we're looking at here. It's not, it's got to happen from us, you know, from our side of the fence. We've got to make this push forward so that everybody else understands.
Yeah. And you know, I think about, you know, new shooters and new gun owners all the time. Mike and I discuss it where we talk about, you know, the importance of training. Now, you've had some of the best training in the world, you know, come from an elite group that you do in a section of the military. And, you know, how, from your perspective, how important is, you know, training and the amount of training and, like, continuing to educate yourself by, like watching videos like yours? How important is that?
I think it's extremely important. I think continued education, if we're going to take a step back and look at a profession, right? If you're going to be a continued peak performer in your occupation, in your whatever it is that you're going to do, you have to continue to kind of like expand your knowledge base. You've got to keep pushing the envelope. You've got to keep pushing the limits in order for you to stay at the top of your game. So I like to try to remind people of that. Like, look at where you are in your life, in your profession. Say you're the, you know, the CEO of a great company. Well, how did you get there? It didn't happen overnight. It didn't happen without hard work, and it certainly didn't happen without you putting the time in, right? So I try to get people to understand that. But what I've also learned is there's like three groups, if you will, and there's nothing wrong with any of these groups, right? They all serve a purpose. And the first group are the people that are interested in probably the absolute bare minimum that they need to feel more comfortable, right? And that can be anything from a state issued LTC to the NRA basic pistol, right? Something that is just very short and sweet, generally about 6 hours or less.
Yes, sir.
And that's it. And that's all they're going to feel. They've met their requirement, their need to feel more comfortable and to demonstrate competency, and that's it. They're good, right? Because to them, they look at this, and there's some reality, or some reality there. The percentage, the likelihood of ever having to use your firearm in a deadly force encounter is very low. So they've measured that, and they've made an informed decision that this for the percentage that I will most likely be exposed to a deadly force threat, I've expended a percentage of my actual time, which makes sense. That's good, right? The second batch are basically 6 hours to 16 hours, right? And this is where we start to get the I like to call them kind of like a professional student. They're like on the road to becoming a professional student.
Yes.
And they 16 hours is like usually about two. It's a 2 day class. It's usually a good immersion into that formalized instruction. And I find that a lot of times people that fall into this category, they get the bug.
Yeah.
They really enjoy it because they find out that there's two parts to it. There's a part that engages their drive to want to do well and be good and generate accolades from their peers. And then there's the other part, which is just, they're recognizing that they're getting better at the skill that allows them to protect themselves and protect their family. So, that's a fantastic place to be, honestly, because I think if somebody were to do, one class 16 hours a year and they did that for 5 years, just imagine at the end of that 5-year period what their skill level would be. It'd be outstanding. And the last group is like basically 40 hours or more.
Yeah.
If you're that is what I consider to be a professional student. You're doing 40 hours or more of formalized instruction in a year. And buddy, that's like you're dialed in.
Yeah.
You're really
being real intentional about your training.
Absolutely. And I see more and more students that are converting from that middle group to that last group.
Yep.
More and more.
That's awesome.
Well, you were talking earlier about the people who are starting to get into firearms. They're smart people. Mm-hmm. And I see it too. And I think they're a lot of these people genuinely want to learn more about their firearm. They want to be more comfortable. We were talking about that last night too. And it does take a certain level to really become comfortable with the firearm, especially if you're going to be carrying it
so
daily.
I think that and that's one of the things too that we talk about in our classes, which is like I would like for you to be confident, but before you're confident, you have to be comfortable.
And so
we really promote more about being comfortable than being confident, because confidence will come with time.
Right.
But let me back up 1 second too. When we talk about comfort, a lot of these students are having to put themselves in uncomfortable positions.
Yes.
Right? They're having to expose some vulnerabilities. Maybe they don't know everything. Maybe they don't understand all this stuff. But they're smart enough to also recognize that they don't know, and therefore they're pursuing, an avenue to fill that gap. Right. And I think it's, I enjoy watching that cycle, watching those, as they go through that. I think that's wonderful. Like I'll see students from year to year and just watch their growth. It's it's also very rewarding for me.
Yeah.
Very rewarding.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
You know, when I think about, we've had the opportunity because of being in law enforcement to have high speed training available to us. And of course, where you come from, on that level, I mean, it's important to train on that level. But at the same time, we've been looking around the industry, and it's kind of hard to find someone that actually specializes in, because you got a lot of those guys, but not that many that actually specialize in training people for concealed carry. And there's some out there right now, we're not going to name anybody, but there's people out there that are self-proclaimed experts in, the concealed carry instruction.
Yeah.
And so I really want to know, from your training background, where you come from and your company, now we're happy, but I want to know, why did you choose to bring yourself back down to that level of training and launched yourself there?
Well, couple reasons. I was very fortunate in my military career to work in various capacities, and some of those capacities required discretion, low visibility, and still being armed at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was not a lot of, I mean, there wasn't a lot of information about that. In fact, the only place that you could go to probably find any type of information would be any of your plainclothes detectives.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they are really the only ones that had a professional requirement to be concealed.
Yes.
That's it. And so I kind of took it upon myself to learn and seek out knowledge and try to improve, because I realized that when I was downrange, I didn't really know. It was a lot of OJT.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it came at a cost. You know, a lot of it was like sleepless nights hoping that I was like, oh, man, I hope I do this. Oh, man, I can't. That was close call, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, as I got better and better and better, it became more natural. Now, what ended up happening was at a certain point, my career path shifted a little bit, and I went in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of forgot about it for the longest time. And then a friend of mine, an old teammate of mine, was like, hey, man, you know what? We're getting ramped up doing a lot of this stuff, and we need a tune-up on some of this low-vis stuff. And
mm-hmm.
and I got the fortune to kind of sit down with them and kind of go over stuff. And the first time I did that class was outstanding. And then I did a similar class for a similar organization.
Mm-hmm.
But the funny thing about it was I couldn't do it on base because the base range that we had was run by the regular military folks, not the special operations side. And they were not very happy with our work from concealment. They were like, whoa, that's scary. Putting guns in pants, that's not good. We don't want anything to do with that. Take that stuff elsewhere. And so we went to over to Quantico, Virginia, and we did that class at the Marine Corps base. And, you know, as a quid pro quo, we let some of the Marines that were loaning us a range into the class.
Mm-hmm.
And they loved it. And they had a specific niche as well to work in low-vis operations. And then one of those staff sergeants transferred to Camp Pendleton. And so he calls me up and he asks me, hey, Jeff, can you come out and do that same program for this new unit out here? And I'm like, sure. But there was no way we were going to do it on Pendleton. So mm-hmm. we had to do it at a local civilian range.
Yes.
And everybody was like, what are those guys doing? Who are they? And, you know, people would come up and ask us questions. And the next group that came up was a local law enforcement agency out of that L.A. County area. And so they do a lot of work undercover. And they asked me to come back out. And I did. And before you know it, it's just like this little trickle. Like I started doing it here, then there, and then people started finding out about it here. And that was like about, that led up to about the year 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And about that time, I might have done one concealed carry class a year.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2014, my normal rotation was about 25 to 30 classes a year. And in 2014, 14 of those classes were concealed carry.
Mm.
And more than half of them were unit level. So it took a big shift, not because I wanted it to, but because that's what the kind of demand was at the time. That's where things were going for us. And once I started doing it at the unit level, we just opened it up to the private citizenry, because I also started to see more interest in concealed carry. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like a time where we started to see more chatter, if mm-hmm. you will, about concealed carry.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't looked back. It's mm-hmm. just been a very awesome experience, because we really were bringing to the table, if you will, material that nobody was doing. I mean, you know, back in 2014, nobody was doing concealed carry work really that was in at that level, and then consistently year to year to year to year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's tapered down a little bit. I now do probably about 6 of those classes a year,
mm-hmm.
but they're still very well demanded. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what people want. They want to learn about that. And the nice thing about our program is built around what we used to call rest of world, ROW.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I might be in, you know, Central America one day, and the next day I'm in Northern Europe,
mm-hmm.
and the next day I'm in you know the southern part of, you know, someplace that's cold.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you know, I'm constantly adjusting my environment, which means that I have to constantly adjust my wardrobe, which means that I constantly have to, you know, be focused on defeat methodology, what we call defeat methodology. And that was the secret. That's like the secret behind the success of our program, is that we teach people not to dress around the gun, which is a very common thing. People talk about this. Yeah, you got to dress around the gun. No, because what that does is that restricts that. That's very myopic in a sense, because then you're very narrowly restricting what you can and can't do. And what we want, what we try to tell our people is like, hey, we want you to live your life, but be armed at the same time.
Correct.
Right? So that's a completely different mindset. Live your life. Go out there. Go to the ball games. You know, go have fun on camping trips. Go do these types of things that you might, you know, that might be complicated to do when you're armed. But instead of looking at the restrictions that are imposed through the dress around the gun, be a little bit more open to how you can get it done. And, you know, that's opened a lot of eyes. That's opened up a lot of people's eyes to, oh, my gosh, you mean I can do that? I'm like, yeah, you can do that. Hell yeah, you can do that. You know, because there's some sort of dogma or, you know, that can sometimes force people in, oh, I can't do that because the internet says I can't do that. So we've opened a lot of people's eyes to how to get that done. And it's been really, really rewarding, particularly for people that are smaller stature. So, you know, very thin, you know, whether they're male or female, and, you know, across all spectrums. You know, we have a tremendous amount of female shooters that are coming in there for the concealment market. They've been a big rising star in the community, if you will. And I love it because, you know, it's challenging and it's, again, rewarding to see somebody that, you know, are now taking their personal safety to the next level.
You know, my follow-up question, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking about, we're still talking about the new shooters and also our audience who are being introduced to you. You know, when we get together, you know, cops and military guys, you know, we tend to tell a lot of stories. And we told some last night during, you know, dinner. And not to get into too many details, you know, one story that, Jeff told us about was an incident when in which a one of his operators ended up being in a room by himself and had to face multiple people. And, you know, so, and, you know, and he did not take any lives at that time. He defended himself otherwise, which is very important. We always talk about, make sure you know how to defend your gun. Make sure you take care of yourself physically and you're able to also be in the fight, and so that you can, you know, deal with multiples as well. But the one thing I was thinking about was, you know, Mike and I talk about de-escalation and avoidance all the time. And we also talk about, you know, the importance of, you know, training, and those who train at a high level actually use less force because they think. Can you give us your take on mindset, preparedness, and such?
Well, it's a complicated subject, not because it's complicated in sense, but because it's so deep. You know, there's so much depth to that subject. So I'll talk about some things. One of the videos that we shot earlier, we talked about like the four Ds, if you will. Detect, de-escalate, disengage, and then defend. Right? And so by creating this kind of like framework, we then pipe that into everybody, you know, like this is kind of like, this is how you need to, this is the lens that you need to look at the world through. Right? You need to be able to detect, which means that you have to be paying attention. You have to be alert and aware of what's happening around you. So we try to, and the key thing about that is avoiding distractions. If I can, if I, you know, like people ask me, how do you build situational awareness? And I'm like, that's kind of hard to answer. Well, here's one thing you can do. Stop looking at your phone. Right? That will be one way to start increasing your situational awareness, right? So that's part of the detect aspect. And I tell people, we mentioned this, one of the skills, like when we talked about in that survey, what are some of the skills that you want to develop? The number one skill, it was like 60% was situational awareness. And that right there was huge, because what does that say? That says people are going to be putting more stock in paying attention in the hopes of avoiding. Right? So detect allows us to potentially avoid or de-escalate. Right? So and like my friend Craig Douglas uses the term verbal agility, which is the ability to have a conversation with people. You know, we become so such a text society that we've forgotten how to actually talk to a human. And so being able to actually talk to somebody in a manner that that does not escalate and potentially sets the framework to de-escalate is key, you know, because if you can de-escalate that situation and walk away from it without ever having to use any type of force, that's that's a win. That's a massive win, right? I tell people this all the time. Anytime you go home when you didn't shoot somebody is a good day.
Amen.
You know, so de-escalate will then potentially lead to disengagement, right? And there comes a time when you got to cut bait. And I tell people, it's like, don't feel compelled to stick around to try to win an argument. Don't feel compelled to stick around to try to hear the other side of the story. You know, if your gut tells you that something's wrong, just leave.
Follow that gut.
Yeah, just turn your feet 90 degrees and engage warp drive. That's like the simplest way to kind of deal with that. And then if you're left with no other alternative, right? If you did a poor job detecting and now you're having to deal with the de-escalation and that's not working, it's only escalating out of your control, and now you can't disengage because you're trapped in some sort of environment, and now you're left with nothing else but just defend.
That's right.
Right. And so, you know, that's where you've got to be very well versed in use of force. You know, the laws as it relates to deadly force.
Amen.
And then, you know, be competent enough to be able to handle that situation with the, you know, with the gear that you have, the equipment that you have. So, you know, that's kind of like what we try to get across to people. Like, that's your framework. Set your framework, detect, de-escalate, disengage, and then defend.
Awesome. And so help our audience to know, like, some of the other things that we're going to be bringing forward in the next couple of weeks, as far as your videos for CCW Safe members.
Sure. Well, we had a very good collection of videos that talked about, like, you know, some of the videos talked about, like, you know, what can I do to help improve my situation awareness, right? We talked about some of the common mistakes that we want to try to avoid. Then we talked about, like, how do I bring a firearm into my home? Right, because a lot of these centrists that are reasonable people that are now bringing a fireman to their home, they're probably going to get some questions from their extended family, maybe children, and so how do we address that? How do we manage that? I think we did a lot of videos. I'm trying to think, was another one that we did. My brain hurts right now.
Justin?
Pre-assault indicators was really good.
Oh, yeah. Behavioral observations. And I can geek out on behavioral observations because, you know, you can – I'm a big fan of – you know, like, if you're going to – if you have children, one of the best things that you can do, aside from being a good parent, is to actually invest in a book called The Gift of Fear.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Love that.
And Gavin DeBecker's book. I read that when I was still in the Navy, and I was like, wow, amazing. But it empowers people to take their personal safety themselves on themselves. And it gives them such great tools, like the ability to say no. The ability to honor your gut feeling. You know, all of these things that in some cases, you know, because we are very generous and kind people in nature, you know, generally speaking, right? And we don't want to offend. We don't want to be just, you know, we don't want to be rude. And so a lot of times that is a manipulative ploy that the violent criminal actor will use to their advantage, right? So like that right there, and Gavin DeBecker is a foremost expert in behavioral observation and behavioral science when it comes to violent criminal activity. I learned a lot just reading that book. And there's several books that came after that I think are equally of value. But right there, that one on behavior and trying to identify those pre-incident cues, those pre-attack cues that are always there. They're always there. You watch any video, and if you just take a step back and you just try to dissect that video, you'll see, yep, there's one, there's two, there's three. My favorite one, and not to bring any kind of like bad publicity, but it was a good setting in a sense that it was a small department, kind of like Southeast, I believe is where it was, and the chief decided that he was going to kind of like relieve his officers on Christmas Day so they can go home and be with their family. So he's going to pull some road duty. And, you know, chief, that's good, great, get out there, but, you know, hasn't been on the road in a while. And so he pulls over somebody and he goes through the interview process. And as a result, he finds out that, you know, this person is going to, you know, be arrested. And so you're watching this all unfold on the dashboard camera, the chief's dashboard camera. And if you watch the behavior of the suspect, you can see the demeanor change and like clockwork. Like, I mean, literally like clockwork. Like the first thing that the bad guy does or the suspect does was, you know, when the chief announces to him that he's going to place him under arrest, the facial expression changes immediately, right? Okay, that's a clue. Okay. Yeah. Obviously, they're not happy with that. Not that anybody should be happy with that, but, you know, that was the first clue. The second clue was the stance. So he went from a conversational stance, and normally when we're talking to one another, we stand shoulder to shoulder, right, squared. And the stance changed to a more bladed fighting stance of sorts, right? Then, and I kid you not, The guy literally rolls up his sleeves.
Oh, no.
Rolls up his sleeves. Good. Yeah. And then the last one is clenched fist.
Clenched fist, yeah.
Yep. And all of this you can see, obviously, to the trained eye. And I don't want to say that I would be able to pick up every one of those cues mm-hmm. in real time. But it's a great training aid to watch what happens. And, you know, it ended with a sucker punch.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Chief handled it well. You know, he's able to rebound and still take the suspect into custody.
Mm.
But, you know, it could have been avoided if there mm-hmm. had been a little bit more attention to those behavioral cues. So I'm a big fan of that one.
Mm-hmm. I got a question for you, Jeff.
Yeah.
You've trained probably thousands of people, concealed carry, civilians, as well mm-hmm. as military law enforcement. Mm-hmm. What do you consider a baseline of proficiency for an average civilian concealed carrier? Is there a qualification test? Is there a drill? Or what do you consider like baseline proficiency?
So, that's a harder question to answer, because the first thing that I will tell you is that I'm not a big fan of any additional legislation that...
No, I'm talking about a skill on it with a handgun.
Yeah, shooting. I get it. Yeah. But like proficiency, it's implied, that, you know, because many states have a proficiency demonstration that they require you to do. And I get why they want to do it. They want to do it because they want to make sure people that are out there handling a firearm are safe,
mm-hmm.
right? But that's marginalizing a constitutional amendment. That's saying that they're limiting
how... I'm not talking about government enforced. I'm talking about as a person.
Individual.
Me,
right, I get
what
that.
What level do I want to reach?
So, but that's what I'm getting at. It's like, it's hard to actually put that out there, because what I don't want is I don't want that to be a limiter to where somebody is going to say, well, I'm not going to be able to do that. I might as well give up. Mm. Might as well not do it, right? I'm more inclined to have an approach that builds competency over time, and then... as you build competency over time, you become more competent in the skills that you're going to really need. Because I don't want to tell somebody that until you develop this skill, you can't carry concealed. You shouldn't carry concealed.
Mm-hmm.
Because I could be robbing them of the opportunity to defend themselves in real time. And who am I to say, or what drill is to say that that's mm-hmm. you're not skilled enough, you shouldn't carry? Because that's not the message that I want to send out either. What I want to send out is like, hey, this is a skill. And like any skill, driving a car, you know, the first time you shaved your face, mm-hmm. it requires practice. It mm-hmm. requires time. It requires some effort. And if you're willing to put that effort in, now we can start to see, because the more effort you put into it, the better you're going to be able to cope with it. So if I had to give out a message,
mm-hmm.
my message is, you know, I think people that are, you know, if you're willing to save your own life, you're probably more than capable of firing the firearm and doing what you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
But you could do yourself a favor.
Mm-hmm.
And you can improve the odds of surviving that deadly force encounter if you enhance your training, if
yes.
you take your training to the next level, if you decide to put a more concentric, because when we're looking at training, we're looking at three things: time, talent, and treasure.
Mm-hmm.
Right, we got to invest all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I there are some people that can't invest any of their time because they're working two jobs. There are some people that can't invest any of their treasure because they are barely making ends meet.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some people that just, you know, their talent might be limited because maybe they have a disability,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So I want to make sure that everybody has the best chance, and I don't want to create any barriers that would prevent that from happening.
Got you.
So that's a different approach, Justin, than what you might have wanted to hear, but it's important because I would love to be able to give you a drill. Master this drill, your worries are over. But that's not the reality,
yes.
no matter what. Because mm-hmm. here's another problem within our industry, is we see this a lot, which is people that decide that they want to bring attention to themselves, so they create these uber challenging, almost impossible drills that they mm-hmm. publish on YouTube and their various social media. Says, yeah, I could do this drill and blah, blah, blah. Well, that drill is only a representation of that drill. Unless you mm-hmm. find yourself in a gunfight where you are facing that drill, it's not really that valuable. So instead, what you want to do is you want to have essential skills,
mm-hmm.
and you want to have a competency level mm-hmm. that means that you've satisfied those essential skills,
mm-hmm.
and that's something that we talk about. There's a there's 12 essential skills for a handgun, and 15 for a rifle. And you know, if you can develop competency across all 16, that leads to proficiency, that leads to mastery, That's what we're talking about. That's what I want
to
see.
Is that going to be some of the things you'll be able to work with us, our group, on, you know, shoot some video in the future? In reference
Absolutely. To? Well, I mean, and I'll do one better. Right now, I'm finishing up one book, and I'm already starting up another book. And that second book, the first book is it's all concealed carry. The second book is going to be essential skills and standards.
Nice.
So that next book is going to be focused on here are the things that I would like for you to develop. Or here's what I would like for you to focus on.
Yes.
These 12 skills. And it like the way that we, and I'll back up even further, like where did this mindset come from? Well, within NSW and I would assume the other special operations community, you know, it's impossible to 100% predict exactly what type of, you know, actions on target you can expect.
Mm-hmm.
We do a tremendous amount of training and practice and planning, but that doesn't mean that we're going to always get it right. And so where we excel at, why we do so well, is because we can bridge gaps, right? So it's not a perfect, the target was a little different than the way we practice.
Yes.
But we practice with that as an understanding so that we can bridge the gap. We don't run into the deer in the headlights syndrome. We're able to jump that gap. So what these essential skills are designed to do is virtually create the ability to jump those gaps.
Nice.
So if you have developed this essential skill, it's like, okay, the gunfight may not be exactly like this. It may not be perfect between the collection of all these essential skills that allows you to jump that gap and be successful.
So Jeff, we're also we're in some strange times. Of course, you got depending on which state you're in, there's quarantine, there's, you know, stay at home stuff. You also have the shortage of ammo, and the abilities and stuff to not ability but time to go to ranges. What's your opinion real quick, or your take on dry fire, you know, because we're in a situation.
That was one of the other ones we did. We did dry fire.
Okay, good.
I feel that dry fire is a very important skill. And I feel like if you do it safely and correctly, it can be very advantageous.
Awesome.
And so I would defer to the video because it's going to do a much better job of actually giving you better content.
That's great.
Than just a short little response right now.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. So, key takeaways?
Yeah, well, I'm so happy that, you know, we finally found a partner that we trust for our members in Jeff Gonzalez, especially to, you know, start you from the beginning. A lot of the new gun owners are becoming CCW Safe members. And even those who are, you know, at a higher level, you know, the importance of, you know, dropping back down and getting your basics down and working on your basics is so, so important. And I want you guys to really be excited about Jeff, you know, jumping on board to partner with us to give you videos for training, something new for us. And we're happy to be able to push them out because we're really serious about those who we surround ourselves with.
Yeah.
So we're happy to have you.
Well, I'm thrilled and I'm excited too. I really see great things coming from the video project. We can kind of tip our hand and let the audience know that the name of the video series is Back to Basics.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. So I like that. That was something that you came up with. I really like that.
I think my key takeaway would be flexibility. You're talking about gear and, you know, trying to not work around the firearm, but working it into your clothing, everything else. And then also when you're talking about proficiency, you know, being flexible if you're new to firearms, you know, being flexible and understanding that this is a path that you're on. It's not something that you're starting and then you're going to go a week and be done. It's something that's going to be a path and a journey you're going to be on for a while, and you just have to be flexible with that, especially in today's society with careers, with, you know, schools, work, everything
challenges.
Else, clothes, challenges, you know,
so
environmental challenges, everything. So,
Jeff, last words?
Well, I want to thank everybody here, Mike, Stan, Justin behind the camera. You guys have been awesome. I've had a great time here. I'm excited to be working with you guys. I'm excited to provide services to, the audience, the CCW Safe audience, as well as try to, you know, encourage more people to join our fold. So I'm looking forward to a lot of fun things. I know this is going to be a great partnership.
Before we get out, I just wanted to put up Jeff's website.
That's
so awesome. Anybody that's looking, go check it out. It's TridentConcepts.com.
Ooh, check that out. That looks so cool.
Yeah, and then we got... You've got a class schedule. Let's see. Have you got anything coming up?
I do, actually. Like this weekend, we got that one, but the one in Florida. So if you're down in Florida, we've got our Combat Pistol 2 class, which is a great it's a great intermediate class, and I you know, try not to look at labels and be like, sometimes people are put off. Oh, it's a level two. Maybe I should start at level one. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we do very well through our curriculum development is we're scalable. Mm-hmm. So we can scale the class according to your skill. As long as you're safe, we can manage that pretty well. So,
awesome.
Yeah. Awesome.
That was cool.
Good
well,
deal.
Well, in closing real quick, you know, Jeff was also one of our affiliates, and in the description, we'll put his code up. And if you join those who are listening to our podcast today, you know, we're going to celebrate you by giving you, you know, 10% off on any of the plans.
Thank you.
You know, so
that's awesome.
Jump on it.
All right. Well, thanks for coming in, man.
My pleasure, guys.
It's been great to have you, and we look forward to having you back soon, man.
I will look forward to it. I always like coming out here.
That's right.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Be safe.
Thanks.
All right.